Opinions expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the management of Louisville.am and Veritas New Media, a Louisville.am production.
Business Center at the corner of Dundee and Douglas in Louisville's Highlands. This is the Startup Podcast, and my name is Dan Vonderhyde. Thank you for finding us, whether it's on the website or through your favorite podcasting apps. I don't know, the iOS podcasting app or Stitcher Radio. We appreciate you looking us up on all of those things. I've actually gone to Louisville.am and added links to those marketplaces and RSS links. So if you use a different podcatcher, why? You are welcome to listen to any Louisville.am show through those devices. It's Idea Festival week, and I was lucky enough to have two-thirds of the equity crowdfunding panel that was hosted by Wyatt, Tarrant, and Combs come into the studio. This week I talk with Jonathan Sandlin. He is the owner of thecrowdcafe.com, and Jeffrey, I should have asked how to pronounce your last name before you left. Bikaris, he is the COO at Spark Market, which is a crowdfunding platform. They came in to break down the new regulations that the SEC put in place. It went into effect actually Monday of this week, September 23rd. And they talk about what this is going to look like heading into the future. And is equity crowdfunding the future of investing for people, where you can pick what you want to invest in, companies that you like, people that you know, and get a piece of the action rather than just a keychain or a t-shirt, which is what I did. So, as always, you can hit us up in the iTunes market or on Stitcher Radio. It's a great way to listen to podcasts, and it helps me measure how we're doing here. I added RSS feeds to the website, and you can hit us up. We're mobily enabled at Louisville.am. The Treehouse software is available now through Louisville Free Public Library to anybody with a library card, which is me. Perhaps I should take advantage of that more often than I do. Maybe we all should. Maybe I'll go down and make my own app. Learn how to do that on the Treehouse software. That's certainly a goal by the end of the year. So just learn how to do that stuff. I'm actually hosting a great panel tonight, if you hear this in time, at the main branch of the library with Todd Earwood, Zach Pennington, and Emily Gimmel. We're going to talk about working in a startup and how maybe Treehouse can help. Head out to lfpl.org if you want to find out more about Treehouse and what that learning program does for you and how it can help you in your startup. But now let's get started with Jeffrey and Jonathan. They were part of the Wyatt, Tarrant, and Combs equity crowdfunding panel for Idea Festival Week, and it's all here on the Startup Podcast. I do have several questions that I planned out. I'm not just going to sit down and start firing stuff away. But what's your impression of Louisville so far? How long have you been here?
I love it. Been in the city for a little under 24 hours, and I've already experienced quite a bit. It's been nice. Beautiful. We're staying down by the river,
okay,
which is a beautiful area of town, but we've taken the opportunity to do a little bit of a driving tour as well. I love the old brick facades, and I love the kind of European style of front-facing buildings with kind of parking in the rear, if you will, that gets a lot more pedestrian traffic. It's beautiful. It's a great time of year, too.
You guys did open coffee this morning?
Yeah, we did.
Was that did you go to Startup Weekend last night at all and see the pitches?
Yeah, I got in pretty late. I saw just the tail end of it.
Okay.
Saw some of the last pitches.
I didn't get to go to that. I participated last time, but I was just socked in this weekend. I'm sad. So I didn't know if open coffee this morning was everybody had a startup hangover, maybe, from the weekend. So
startup hangovers are pretty common. I don't know that it's necessarily confined to weekends.
So gotcha. Okay. I guess you're right. So we're here to talk about crowdfunding, and we were talking a little bit about my experience, but you sort of surprised me, Jonathan, when you said that, and we'll talk about the equity stuff here in a second, but that my expectation was that most of the money would come from people I didn't know. And in truth, 90% of my money came from people I did know,
mm-hmm.
which was surprising to me. And that's the norm. So
Do you think that that would carry over to equity stuff?
It really largely depends on the type of business. So if you look at a small business that's built enormous social capital, so it knows its community knows the business, you are going to have the first investors that are typically local. However, with investment-based crowdfunding, the big difference is it fosters the investment motivation. So whereas rewards-based crowdfunding, you know, nobody is in there to make money because you can't. You're not receiving a security. You're not receiving equity or debt or any sort of royalty-based agreement. But investment, you can. And so what we're actually seeing abroad where these markets are more mature is you are seeing investors from other geographies come in, but typically after there's already been sort of local validation, because that's a great signal. So yeah. If I'm an investor, let's take, for example, you know, you're a small business, you're a restaurant in Louisville, and you're trying to raise $250,000. If you raise the first $125,000 from a number of local investors, then an investor in Ohio may say, hey, you know, I want to support this business, but also it looks like a great investment
opportunity. Where there's smoke, there's fire.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's sort of local validation. So I'll come in, I'll write, you know, a $5,000 check because I'm viewing this as an investment. And it's also nice to support a local business. But first and foremost, you know, this is competing for my investment portfolio.
Okay. Crowdfunding has, how old of a phenomenon is this? 3 years, maybe? Crowdfunding, I should say.
Sure. Well, yeah. Okay. So
I mean, the concept of a bunch of people throwing money into a hat is like passing the hat at the keg party, you know? Hey, crowdfunding.
That's exactly right. And I mean, I'm glad you put that second qualification on the question, because I think if your question initially is how old is crowdfunding, the answer is somewhere around 3,000 or 30,000 years.
Okay.
Because of the pass the hat phenomenon. I mean, different societies have pass the hat to raise funds for different projects since we've, you know, had centralized or agriculture, basically. Mm-hmm. Online crowdfunding, different phenomenon, of course. And Jonathan can speak a little more intelligently to what's been going on overseas. But in the United States, the rewards-based piece has really started to gain traction, I would say, over the last 3 years, although I believe it's been around for about five now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Have we moved past some sort of honeymoon stage with all of that, with, I guess, the initial buzz of like, wow, here's this new thing that people can do, and now there are umpteen platforms that people can raise money on? Is that marketplace getting diluted to where it's even harming the concept, where there's just too much and maybe a major – well, I guess there are a couple of major players, but some of that stuff needs to consolidate a little bit to – I don't know, focus?
Not in my view. I actually don't think that we're past the honeymoon phase. I don't even think we're engaged yet.
Oh, all right.
I think we're still getting ready to go to the dance. Yes, the industry, the infrastructure has been building itself and out there advertising for a few years now, particularly since the Jobs Act passed. We've seen businesses that are developing the ecosystem really get out there and get out front. But where the rubber meets the road is the investors themselves.
Yeah.
And that's what's really going to prove out the concept, is whether the investors trust the process, are interested in the process, and are going to be involved in this. And because we don't have regulations on the federal level yet, we don't know how that aspect is going to play out, because all of this is academic until we actually start to see the deals blow up on a national level and see how the investing public reacts to it.
Well, there's been a little bit of PR backlash, and mostly to the Hollywood types who everybody thinks has money, and they go out and they – but that's, you know, unfortunately, that's the media. They're going to pick up on something. Oh, my people are mad at Zach Braff, mm-hmm. and then USA Today runs a story, and people get their news from USA Today or one of these – and that makes the rounds like, oh, my gosh, this crowdfunding thing. What? That's a ridiculous notion. That, you know, so have we sort of seen the worst of that? And with equity crowdfunding, will we see more or less?
Do you think? And I mean, it's rewards-based crowdfunding and donation-based, where you're not receiving an investment, is an entirely different beast than investment-based crowdfunding. And so if you look at Zach Braff, and there are a number of other famous movie stars who raised large amounts of money on Kickstarter, the great people had is that, you know, you're raising all these funds, but the investors that are making money off of it, you know, are Hollywood investors, or mm-hmm. they're not, you know, all your contributors who sort of de-risk the project aren't receiving a financial return. You know, my personal belief is that backers, you know, the reason why they're pledging is because it's for participation. It's that idea of I want to be involved with something. So they are getting something. However, once investment crowdfunding comes online, It's going to change everything, in my opinion, because now if you have two films crowdfunding, one goes on Kickstarter rewards, the other goes on an investment-based platform like FilmFunder is one that's lining up for investment-based on for films. And the backers on the investment-based actually receive a percentage of ticket sales. Now, how awesome is that going to be? How many people are going to say, I want to go to an indie film festival and I'll invest $100 for a sliver of eventual ticket sales? Mm-hmm. Everyone's going to want to say that they are able to do that.
Sure.
On the reward side,
those checks never stop coming in the mail, even if they're only for 30 cents.
And even for 30, you know, yeah. Who cares? I mean, and over, you know, the likelihood is you're going to lose your money. Absolutely. I mean, investing in arts, film, or music is very risky, but people will say, okay, to be honest, I'm getting a free ticket and I do want some upside. And also, I want to be an investor, because there's a definite philosophical difference between being a backer and actually being an investor. It's sort of like, you know, if you pledge to a restaurant, it's like, cool, you get a gift certificate, you know, maybe you get a t-shirt. If you invest, you own a brick. Mm-hmm. Like, you go to that restaurant and you're like, it's cool. Like, you're involved. You are a part owner. And back to your original question, on the rewards side, it's interesting because there are, you know, like you said, umpteen platforms. It's an incredibly fragmented market. You know, there's Kickstarter for dogs. There's Kickstarter for veterans. There's Kickstarter for sports.
All under the Kickstarter brand?
No. Oh, okay. I was sort of using that as the pitch.
As a generic term.
As a generic. Okay. Oh, gotcha. But Kickstarter owns 90% of the market. Kickstarter, the big three are Kickstarter, Indiegogo, and Rocket Hub. And collectively, they own around 95% of the U.S. market. The interesting thing is you are seeing now, we're almost seeing saturation where I think everyone now feels like they've been hit up for a Kickstarter project. At least I feel that way sometimes.
Sure.
Where it's, everyone's sort of out there asking. The great thing about investment is you're not just asking for a donation. You're actually giving something back in return of financial investment. And so I do think that's going to change and make it much more of a sustainable mechanism for business funding. You know, for project funding, for creative projects, still going to make a lot of sense for Kickstarter.
Okay.
You're not offering equity. You're not offering return. But if you are raising capital as a business, to be honest, you don't need donations, nor do you necessarily deserve them. You need at-risk capital. You need expecting capital that's going to hold you accountable. And you need investment capital.
Okay. Anything to add? You can't. Nobody can see you nodding your head.
Yeah, I am. I am nodding my head in agreement, though. I'm not sure I could put it much better than that. I mean, okay. I do think that we're gonna see a different type of psychology at work. I mean, when securities-based crowdfunding really comes online and goes national, there's just a fundamental difference.
What's the timeline there? Do we have an idea of that?
Yeah, so there's two parts of the Jobs Act
okay.
that have implications for security-based crowdfunding. The first is Title III. That allows anybody to participate. So there's a litany of provisions that protect investors, but that allows anyone to invest whether they are accredited or non. And the definition of accredited is you make more than $200,000 a year as a single person, over $300,000 a year as a couple, or your net worth is over $1 million, not including the equity in your primary residence.
Okay.
So effectively a high net worth individual. Title III allows anyone, not both non-accredited and accredited. That is a ways away. Nobody really knows. Anyone who tells you they do is wrong. It looks like perhaps mid-2014
okay.
or late 2014. However, Title II of the Jobs Act, the other part of crowdfunding, effectively allows for accredited crowdfunding. So it lifts the ban on general solicitation. And what it allows companies to do is for the first time ever to generally advertise their offering. However, only accredited investors can participate. So if I'm raising money for my business, that just went into effect today.
Okay.
So this is a historic day. Today.
September 23rd.
September 23rd.
There's going to be a delay on when this thing is released, so we need to
So September 23rd, Title II has gone into effect today. And you actually, this morning, there's an accelerator in Ohio that broadcast its pitch day under these new regulations, which prior would not have been legal, because prior there was a ban on general advertising and general solicitation. It's a stepping stone. And, you know, I'm optimistic for Title II because it's better for businesses. Now they can advertise.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's still exclusive.
Okay.
In my mind, as long as it's a stepping stone to a workable Title III or a workable interstate regulations that allow everybody to participate, it's great. But we can't just sort of rest on Title II and say, okay, we've done our job. You know, we need to make sure that we actually democratize private capital markets.
Is this the future of investing I jotted down Joe Sixpack, for just the regular guy who has a little bit of money saved up, and he might want to he may have a dream about owning something. That's the American dream, right? Ownership. Mm-hmm. And is this something that is going to maybe get him to loosen up his purse strings? Maybe it's a little easier to understand because maybe it's written in a plain language and it's less intimidating. I don't know. Are the risks bigger or smaller than, say, traditional investing?
I'm not sure whether the risks are bigger or smaller, whether that can actually be known at this point in the United States, whether we have the data available to support one position or another. My suspicion is that it depends on what you put it up against. Is it going to be riskier than investing on a ticker symbol in a Dow Jones that's part of the Dow Jones component? Probably yes, it will be more risky for that. I mean, it will depend on the type of business that's doing the crowdfunding, but is it the future of investing in the United States? No, I don't believe so. It is a portion of the future of investing in the United States. The amount of somebody's investable capital that they should be putting at risk on crowdfunding campaigns will depend on, you know, that individual's finances and risk tolerance. But I would anticipate that it will be very low portion of their portfolio and should be.
Is this something that's going to be a regular conversation with an investment? I have an investment guy. Mm-hmm. Is he going to want to talk to me about this? Is he going to know about this? Or are there, like, what's the real opportunity here? Is there an opportunity to, I mean, you're both working in this already. I assume that you're making some sort of a living off of being crowdfunding experts. I mean, is there a cottage industry that's going to pop up and there will be crowdfunding experts who are maybe, I don't know, do you have to get accredited or approved to be that guy or girl, woman, sorry, to advise people on how to invest wisely in crowdfunding? Or is this going to be a Wild West situation where break out the credit card and let's let it rip?
Yeah, and Jeff hit the nail on the head where, you know, crowdfunding, so what crowdfunding gives you access to is the private capital markets. It's not a new asset class. So actually a lot of people don't really know that it's illegal to invest in a private company or it's illegal to be advertised to. So the private capital markets, these are private companies. These are existing small businesses. These are startups. They are not public. And today, the average individual does not have access to this marketplace. So it's not overnight going to be, okay, let's take all my assets from, you know, my mutual fund or my IRA and shift into the private markets. That's definitely not prudent. However, it could be a portion of your portfolio. And when you look at sort of the zeitgeist where there's a pervasive distrust in the public markets, they are broken. They have lost the trust of the American investor, and rightfully so. They're 60% algorithmically traded. Everyone knows the deck is stacked against them. Mm-hmm. You know, I worked my first job on Wall Street was on the buy side at an institutional fund. The amount of data I had available, the speed at which I had access to it, there's huge advantages to institutional investors at the expense of retail investors. So I think people are fed up. Yet today, they have zero alternative. Where else can they put their money? Checking account gets 10 basis points. You know, treasury bonds, maybe 3% over 10 years, but that's probably not going to beat inflation. So there's very little alternative. They are captive to the public markets. Whereas post-security—
I just buried my money in my backyard in a coffee can.
Yeah.
It's fine out there.
Which is exactly, but not for inflation, though. I mean, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
Until my dog poops on it, then, yeah. You know. That's how I grow my money, fertilize it. That's a bad joke. I totally knocked you off, of course.
No. I mean, but it's unfortunate because, you know, the individual investor, we're being screwed over. We have no alternative. Yet with crowdfunding, it's saying, hey, you can invest in a business you actually trust.
Right.
You're not investing against a machine. You're not investing in a broken marketplace. You're investing in somebody you trust, somebody that you know. It's still going to be risky. It's not always going to be equity either. It's not, you know, let's invest in a high-risk startup. It could be, hey, let's lend. Let's get an 8%, you know, of a restaurant that's been in the community for the past 5 decades, probably has had the same cash flow for the past 20 years, give or take. And they say, hey, we want to raise $100,000. We'll pay an 8% interest rate. How many people in the community will say, I want to take that? Mm-hmm. I'll invest a small amount. It doesn't have to be $10,000. It could be $100. So that's sort of the power.
I think that's a good example of – and we probably should lay some more out to say – what type of a project or company would participate in equity crowdfunding?
Or this would be debt. So equity is where you'd actually take ownership of the company.
Oh, gotcha.
And equity is quite complex. Debt would be – you would effectively become your own micro lender.
Okay.
And this already takes place today. You see micro lending abroad where you have a large number of individuals, you know, lending as few as $50 or $100 to a local business. And in return, they're getting a small interest rate. And so it works just like any debt vehicle.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think you're going to see a lot of different types of businesses do securities-based capital raises. Personally, my view is that businesses that are making tangible products, businesses that have an identified community, however that community is defined. It might be geographically based, to use the restaurant example. It might be regionally based if it's a microbrewery or something like that. Mm-hmm. It might be nationally based if they've got a consumer product that, you know, can cross state lines easily into different markets. But I mean, I do think that you're going to see a lot of different types of businesses use it. But I think things that people can touch, things that are tangible, are really going to resonate with investors the most, at least initially.
Okay. What sort of reputational challenges are there at this point for crowdfunding as a – just in general, whether it's rewards-based or – I mean, what are the challenges here for this to become something that is talked about at the dinner table?
Yeah, I mean, there's still a pervasive lack of awareness and education. That's to be expected. This is a new marketplace. Not only is it a new marketplace, it's a new financial marketplace. And so it's competing against attention for marketplaces, you know, incumbent marketplaces, so the public markets that have been around for centuries. And so it's going to take time. I mean, you pointed out, you know, will my financial advisor be coming to me and telling me about it? Probably not. You'll have to go to your financial advisor and say, hey, I saw this article. I read about how you can invest in local businesses. How do I do this? So it's going to take time.
Are they
going
to tell me I don't want to do that?
Potentially.
Selfishly?
Potentially okay. So, because if you look at, you know, and don't want to make broad brush statements, but a lot of financial advisors, you know, they want to invest prudently. The financial markets are established. And more importantly, they're liquid. So if you buy a public equity, you can sell it 5 seconds later. So I buy Microsoft at $36. I need to sell it tomorrow. I can probably sell it for $35.50.
Does Microsoft have to go down?
Or up?
I'm the only Microsoft fan you know, and you just totally all over.
Paying great dividends. You know, cash cow for sure. So where private securities, you don't have there isn't today a liquid exchange. So if you invest in a small business, depending on the type of instrument, if it's equity, you know, you may not receive a return for 5, 6, 7 years. If it's debt, it's very different. You'll receive interest rate immediately. But it's just different. The market's not as liquid. So there are risks, new risks. So I think the reputational risk is a lot of – every platform is very well aware that, you know, they need to be very careful. A lot of people talk about fraud, but a lot of my research, I've studied – this is already legal in certain countries, in the UK, Australia to varying degrees, Netherlands – Italy just passed crowdfunding regulation. There's not been a single incidence of fraud. I've captured over $300 million in transactions. There will be fraud, but it's very difficult to defraud someone when you're in a completely transparent open environment. Yeah. You know, if I try to raise money for an electric car online, you click on my LinkedIn profile and you immediately see that I don't have an engineering background. And you ask a question. And by asking that question, everybody sees it. I have to answer. So if you look at where fraud takes place traditionally offline. It takes place in the shadows, one-on-one conversations where I can tell you whatever I want. I can tell 100 people different things.
And do it with a smile on your face.
And do it with a smile on your face. The second you go online, everybody knows you. They know your identity. They check up on you. And so that brings an enormous amount of accountability to the capital formation process.
Okay. What makes a successful campaign? Like, what elements go into? And I'm talking really to the masses of people who have an idea, which is why I do this podcast, because I think everybody has an idea. They just don't know where to turn next or what the first step might be. And I think crowdfunding, certainly to me, that provided an easy first step once I was aware of what was going on. So if somebody was going to raise, I don't know, $10,000 to do something, what do they need to do to be successful with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think intelligent campaign design is what that question really gets to, and that's extremely important. Most crowdfunding campaigns today do not succeed. When securities-based crowdfunding goes national, or at least, you know, gets into the public's consciousness for the some of the other models that are out there right now, too, the intrastate models, it's that I don't think that those are going to be more successful by volume than the rewards-based campaigns that are up now. So it comes down to intelligent campaign design. Identify who your community is. That's number one.
Okay.
So whatever your product is, whatever your service is, who are the folks that are going to be most interested in seeing your product or service exist in the world? Is it your friends and family? Is it your geographic location, neighborhood? Is it the folks who are going to consume your product or mm-hmm. service? Probably. You have to identify those folks, and then you have to target them intelligently. Video, audio, road shows, parties, shaking hands, kissing babies. This is all the type of stuff that goes into successful fundraising under any particular type of a model. And so I think it's going to be identifying that community and finding a way to reach them. For the bigger raises, as Jonathan mentioned, it's going to be probably getting some anchor investors involved who get the smaller investors more comfortable with the deal and the deal terms, and then you sort of generate momentum that kind of gets you over the top. The last thing I would say with respect to businesses that are going to be successful and coming up with intelligent campaign design is crowdfunding works best when your community wants the thing to exist. They're not just looking for a rate of return. Yes, they're investing their money. They want a rate of return, and they want their money back at the end of the thing, hopefully with a nice profit attached to it. But what they also want is they want the thing to exist in the world, and they believe in you as the campaign manager to make that happen.
You need a kick-ass video. Connection.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, and that just goes to telling the story of what you want to do. Like, the video may make an intelligent point or take an intelligent approach, but – you know, this is an emotional thing. Money is very emotional to people. That's you work your whole life to earn money so you can do things that you find interesting, and that would include giving somebody money for a project or a business or something. So, you know, that's a good point. But it takes it's thinking through it. You know, it's more than saying, I got an idea, I want to record an album, I'm just going to ask people for money.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. And I mean, we tell people all the time that the public – front-facing portion of your campaign that's going to be listed on an intermediary, it's going to be listed on your Kickstarter, your Indiegogo, or the securities-based platforms that are going to be working in this industry. You need to view that as the last mile of the marathon. Mm-hmm. Your marathon is run when you're identifying your community, you're designing your campaign, you're putting your promotional materials together, so that when you actually hit the go live button, you give yourself the greatest possibility of success. The last mile of the marathon.
And that would, you'd feel a lot better about that 30 days too, because that was nerve wracking to say. And I had almost nothing to say. That was the weirdest thing, is that if my project didn't get funded, it didn't get funded. So big deal. I mean, I paid a guy to do my video. I would have been out that money, but that was it. So, but going into it, knowing that you've vetted every single thing and crossed every T and dotted every I, and you know this backwards and forwards, and you can have the same conversation with anybody, that would provide probably eliminate some of that anxiety, so to speak. So looking into the future, if you're a person who has some money saved up and you like to invest and you're thinking about that, what does all of this mean in the next 6 months to a year? Like, what do I have to be thinking about?
Yeah, I mean, actionably, in the next 6 months, if you are an accredited investor, if you're high net worth, you can begin investing in deals online today. And
literally today, of September 23rd.
Yeah, as of today. I mean, so there's a number of platforms out there. Each of them is offering different types of deal flow. One example, for example, is CircleUp. It's crowdfunding equity for existing emerging growth consumer product companies. These are companies with over $1 million in revenue. They're raising growth capital. So you can go there, you create an account, if you are an accredited investor, you certify, and then you're basically given this deal flow where you can invest as little as $5,000 in a deal. And there's a number of other platforms like that as well, AngelList, WeFunder, Funders Club. And so as an accredited investor, what you want to do is, you know, get to know all these platforms, get to know the deal flow. Some are focused on early stage startups, some are focused on emerging growth companies, some are focused on small businesses, and just familiarize yourself with these new markets. Eventually, as a non-accredited investor, everybody else, you know, 97% of America who's not accredited, once Title III comes online, and if you are in a state where there's intrastate crowdfunding legislation, you can begin going to platforms and investing as soon as that goes into effect. Title III might be a little while. Interstate is live today in Georgia and Kansas, which is where Jeff with Spark Market is, and they're going to begin fundraising here very shortly. That's as an investor. As a business, anywhere, any geography as a business, you can now go out and generally advertise you're raising capital through a platform. Now, okay. Make sure there's a number of provisions. But there's platforms now that if you're a startup, you know, Seed Invest, for example, or Early Shares, for example, you go there, you create a pitch, they walk you through it, and you can solicit capital. You can try to raise capital online. Whereas today, you know, you may be confined to investors in your geography. Now, at least you'll be given a nationwide audience. It does not guarantee outcome, of course, but it does guarantee opportunity,
okay,
which is a big change.
All right. Where do we do you have something to add?
Yeah, okay. I wanted to add on to that a point that Jonathan made that I think is important, is that rightfully and understandably, the focus on securities-based crowdfunding has been national. It's been on the Jobs Act. It's been on waiting on the SEC to come out with, as Jonathan said, its Title II and Title III regulations. However, I do want to make the important point that if you are an unaccredited investor in the state of Georgia or the state of Kansas, you can invest in a securities-based crowdfunding campaign yesterday.
Oh, okay.
So, and in fact, for the past year and a half.
Apart?
What sets those two states apart is that businesses that are located in those states, if they confine their campaign of general solicitation for securities-based crowdfunding to within the four corners of those states, the SEC does not have jurisdiction to regulate those capital raises because it is what we call an intrastate-only offering, and there's an exemption on the federal level for that.
Okay.
And then the state regulators in those states have decided to put their own crowdfunding exemptions in place.
Okay, so any state could technically do that. Those two states are just have progressive.
That's correct.
On this particular issue.
That's correct.
Okay.
Kansas put their exemption in place in 2011. Georgia followed suit in 2012, and other states are considering that now. It's a mechanism for them to keep dollars local.
You live in Georgia, right?
I live in Georgia, right. Yes.
Where are you from, John?
Ohio. I'm living in New York at the moment.
Oh, nice. Okay. Well, we're glad to have you in Kentucky, if just for a couple of days. Where do we find you guys online? How do we connect with you?
Sure. And we're glad to be here and talking about this, so thank you. But sure. You can reach us at www.sparkmarket.com. Okay. Spark Market is the name of our platform. And as I said, we're operating live in the state of Georgia now.
And if somebody had a question for you specifically, are you on Twitter or something?
We are on Twitter, but it's easiest to reach me, jeff@sparkmarket.com.
Well,
send me an email.
Jonathan?
Yeah, and I run thecrowdcafe.com, and the word "the" is actually in the domain, unfortunately. So the Crowd Cafe,
and you know it'd be cooler if you dropped it. Of course, everybody
I tried.
Tells you that,
somebody owned it. Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, you should see when I look at my Google search organic, and everyone searches Crowd Cafe. But yeah, so I publish research and data on the global industry. So a lot of what I try to do is this is legal to varying degrees abroad. Try to capture data and insight what's working, what's not. And how can that shape our expectations for how we'll see these marketplaces evolve in the U.S.? And, of course, I cover the U.S. industry as well, which is pretty much brand new and entirely new industry. And so I can be reached on Twitter at JSANDLUND or at J@thecrowdcafe.com.
Great. Thank you, fellas.
Thank you.
Pleasure. All right.